Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett. Here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You're listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. We have Jan Schwenda. Is it Schwenda? Is that how you say it?
Yes, that's the Czech pronunciation.
I just learned that is the Czech. I've been calling you Schwenda, this Americanized version. I like it to be authentic on the show. So Jan Schwenda, welcome.
Thanks for
back
that.
To
Thanks
the show.
For that.
And it is Jan, right? You're not like
No. Okay, I'm Jan.
Okay. I didn't want to, you know, hey, at least you're not saying your name's like, you know, Tony or James or something like that, you know.
No. I'm just making my surname a bit easier, but that's about it.
Okay. It's funny. It's like if you I had this in college where, you know, you'd have someone from like Japan or China and, you know, clearly we're born there and you ask them what their name is and thinking that they want to fit in, they give you some Americanized name. It's like, oh, what's your name? Tony. Like that is not your name, my friend. What is your name? No, it's Tony. Tony what? Tony Smith.
Yeah. Sure.
Very Japanese name.
Yeah, no. I think it makes sense to make it easier for some people, but obviously you don't want to be too Americanized.
Yeah,
I mean, I actually do it because my name is like Svenda, and we have this special character in Czech language which is pronounced as sh. Okay. So actually, it's not like ch or anything like that. So that's why essentially mainly.
But, okay. Yeah. Sven is close enough. It's, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool name. I think that's a cool name. So let's speaking of names, what name do you want to discuss on OTC? You like that transition?
Perfect transition. Yeah. You're very good at that. So the other stock that I want to mention actually is Millennium Investment and Acquisition Corporation. So it's MILC, the ticker.
Say that again. What was the name again?
Millennium Investment and Acquisition Corporation.
See, that's harder to remember than Jan Schwenda.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean,
that's harder.
One of the more generic names out there in the OTC space. Yeah.
Right. So what is this thing?
Yeah. You mentioned that you're not a friend.
Yeah,
you're not.
I wasn't actually. I'm not actually familiar with this company.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So more fun for me. This is actually a company, it's a holding company.
Okay.
They report to the SEC, so you can actually find all the filings, so it's not too hard to find the data.
I want to say something, too, that it's not intuitive it's a holding company just because it sounds like a holding company, because they could be searching for, like, the Loch Ness Monster.
Sure,
you never
or
know.
Bigfoot, as we mentioned. Yeah. No, it's just what I wanted to say by holding companies that they own two different assets that are not really tied together at all. So they're two
what
parts.
What a surprise!
That's usually exactly. You get a mashup of like this completely weird stuff, and this is not the exception. A Millennium Investment Acquisition Corporation actually started as a SPAC. So special purpose acquisition company, and they raised money to actually invest in India. They wanted to invest in a company in India, in a company in India in the early 2000s. And they raised the money and they actually settled with a broker in India. So they actually own, they still own a stake in a private brokerage firm in India, which is one of the largest brokerage firms actually in the country.
So they've probably made bank then since then, huh?
Well, you know, there are some caveats to it, so okay. I'm going to talk about that. It's not that easy, but because since it's a private company, they actually didn't really monetize the whole value yet. So that's kind of where one part of the thesis comes from, that, you know, they bought the stake in the Indian brokerage firm, and they kind of held on to it for a while, but they really haven't been able to monetize it. So that's one part of it. So that's kind of like what historically the company was, they still own the stake. So that's one part of the asset base. And the second part of the asset base is a plan for macadamia nuts in Hawaii. And they're trying to do something with something called the activated carbon. So what happened with the stock in 2013 was that there was a proxy battle, and one shareholder, who's now the chief executing officer, and I'm essentially in charge of the business, he got himself elected in charge. And he actually, in 2013, he then pursued kind of other strategic investments that they could own, and he settled with this plant in Hawaii. Now they bought the plant actually out of bankruptcy. If you read the filings, they're super happy about the price they got it at, which, you know, I don't think it's so surprising because it was bankrupt. So you know, the management seems to be pointing to like, oh, we got this really great bargain, you know, but I'm not so sure about this asset, but that's the other asset. And they're trying to essentially do activated carbon is actually a commodity, but they're trying to use it for alternative energy and kind of like a storage of batteries and so on and so forth. So it's a bit more complex. I don't necessarily want to go too much into detail on how things work there. But, you know, bottom line is that it's relatively speculative what they're trying to do with the activated carbon plant in Hawaii. But what is interesting about the company is if you look at the valuation. So you know about these two assets. You have the you know, you have this stake in the private brokerage in India, and you have this plant in Hawaii. And if you look at the market cap currently, it's about $4 million or $5 million. And if you look at their balance sheet, you're going to see, you know, multiples of value. You're going to see the net tangible book at like 19 million or something like that, right? Because they value themselves, obviously. They value the stake in the brokerage firm, and they value the plant in Hawaii at something as well. So that's obviously the kind of straightforward upside that you can see. But obviously, you know, a lot of times when these hidden assets, in terms of, you know, they're hiding in plain sight, right? I mean, you know, you kind of stumble upon the company and say, oh my God, you know, they're trading at 19 million, their tangible book is 90 million, they're trading at 4 million. What, you know, wow, it's such a bargain. Like, that's for sure going to be an investment opportunity. But obviously, you know, you have to kind of drill down a bit more and try to understand why they're trading at such a discount, because obviously, you know, the fact that it is a SEC reporting company, it makes, you know, it is actually a red flag why they're such a huge discount. And I started looking into that, and I actually stumbled upon it on the company about 2 years ago, actually. So I've been following them for a while, and I actually stumbled upon them when the discount was actually much smaller. So right now the stock is actually down. But I think that at this point in time, I think it's even more interesting than it was before, because the discount is so large. So I started looking into why the discount is there, right? That's the first step in trying to understand why people don't believe that, you know, the assets are worth what they're worth on the book. The first thing I looked at was the plant in Hawaii. And I think that, you know, obviously I mentioned this is a speculative thing. And I believe that, you know, I'm no expert in activated carbon. I'm not expert in alternative energy and storage and batteries and so on and so forth. And I'm not expert on how they want to use that. But you know what, given the valuation, let's just say that it's valued at zero. You know, we can completely write it off from the balance sheet. And say, okay, well, you know, there's not going to be any value coming out of that. The guy that is in charge right now actually has actually been running other public companies focused on alternative energy. So it's not as crazy as it could sound, you know, for a company that, you know, owns a stake in a private brokerage firm in India to do something like that. So I think that he has plans with it, and there should be some value, but, you know, who knows when it's going to happen. So let's say that it's worth zero. And I would say that even if it's speculative, you have the margin of safety in the asset base. So you have a plan. It's not like a biotech. It's not like that they would be trying to, you know, get a drug approved. You still have some sort of facility that could have some liquidation value. But let's say it's zero. And then you have the brokerage firm, right? And the brokerage firm on the book value is about, you know, 11 million or something like that. And so why the market is so skeptical that they could be, you know, why the market is so skeptical? Why is there the discount connected to the brokerage firm? I could understand the macadamia plant nut, right? I mean, that's just speculative investment. But why a brokerage firm, which actually makes a lot of money because they publish the financials of the company? So if you go into the SEC filings, you will find that the Millennium Investment Acquisition Corporation, they actually show the financials of the brokerage. So, and these are audited. So, you know, certainly you have to kind of do your own research and, you know, try to track down as much as information as you can. But, you know, certainly, you know, there is some sort of feeling for what they can make and how big the company is. So you can actually get to know that. So first of all, if you look at that, you know, you can see they're making money. It's not declining in revenue or anything like that. And if you look at, you know, Google search, you'll just try to kind of learn more about the company. You'll see that there's no inherent problem, and they seem to be doing fine. So from that perspective, you know, it seems weird that why such a discount? And moreover, if you look at how the company, how MILC actually owns the stake and what kind of agreements they have with the company, you can then further question actually why the discount is present, because they actually have an agreement with the company that they can sell, essentially with a private brokerage, that they can sell 100,000 shares every month for a price. Or given price. So actually they can start selling off and monetize the value in the investment, even if it's private, right? Because obviously the ultimate catalyst here is the IPO or any sort of unlocking of the value in the brokerage. But they don't have to wait for that. They can actually sell 100,000 shares every month, and they do own about 10 million right now shares of the Indian brokerage. And guess what? They've been selling it, and they've been selling it for $1.5 per share. The 100,000 shares. So what you're looking at is that they're selling 100,000 shares for $1.5 per share, which then allows you to value the stake for the prices that they can get. And you would be valuing the stake in the brokerage firm currently at $14 million. And that's a value that they can certainly get. I mean, obviously it's, you know, restricted to monthly sales and so on and so forth. And it would take them a long time to actually sell it off. But, you know, you have 14 million of value that they can certainly, at least part of it they can get. And, you know, you're now looking at a company that's trading at 4 million, right? And, you know, even if you take a negative value on the macadamia nut plant in Hawaii, you know, you would have to write off 8 million or whatever, 10 million of the brokerage firm to get to the current market cap. And I don't think that's super reasonable. And I think that, you know, when you start looking at the brokerage firm, I think that, you know, it doesn't make much sense for it to trade at such a discount. So that's kind of like the basis. There are two assets. One of them is kind of questionable and speculative. That's the plant in Hawaii. However, there is a plant. There is some sort of liquidation value. So even if it doesn't pan out, and the management actually said that the commercial activity should start this year. So, you know, if it's not going to start this year, maybe, you know, it's worth revisiting the thesis and so on and so forth. But, you know, if they are not going to burn through much value, then, you know, you're looking at a second asset that's valued at $14 million. And you can get that for $4 million. So that's kind of like the two main parts. And I don't think that the discount make much sense. And that's kind of like the basis. Yeah. Is that understandable?
Or? Yeah. Interesting. How did you discover this company?
Yeah. So this one was just through my usual A to Z, I believe.
Okay.
I think this was, so I did A to Z research, essentially the manual search. So where you go, like, you know, you pull up a ticker that starts with A, and then you just look at it and try to understand if it's reasonable or not. I actually stumbled up on this one through a different strategy. You can use SIC codes on OTC Screener.
Explain that.
So if you go to OTC Market, So if you go to OTCMarkets.com, where obviously you have the stock screener with all these OTC companies. In the first part of the podcast, I mentioned that actually there are no fundamental data there. And that's true, but there are some data points which you can use to actually be able to find some interesting companies. And one way to do that is actually to look at the SIC code. So essentially, it's the classification of industry code. And that can allow you to actually track down some of the industries that you're interested in more, you know, that you might be interested or you might know about. Or it allows you to skip some. And that's, I think, what I used it for partially. Because you can skip like mining, you can skip like biotech and all these companies where in the OTC space, usually they're not super interesting. Again, you have to kind of, you know, you have to connect with the A to Z search and make sure that you don't miss anything, but you can search for some you know, industries maybe a bit faster than you would do through just going, you know, one by one. So actually, I think I found this one through the SEC, SIC code listings, and you can kind of like search for different industries, and that's how I found it. Yeah.
Do you ever search though for do you ever search through the mining or biotech? And the reason I ask is, I mean, even in reported companies, you know, occasionally you'll have a biotech company that trades below net cash.
Yeah, exactly. I do. So as I mentioned, this is just like an additional strategy, and it can allow you to, for example, focus on community banks. Like, you know, if you're super right. interested in community banks, you know, then you don't need to go A to Z. You don't need to look at every company because you have the SIC codes. But I think that, you know, like for me, it was just additional strategy that I wanted to make sure that I kind of cover the space well and I understand how it works and stuff. But yeah, but certainly, I mean, there are opportunities everywhere. And obviously, the biggest opportunities are usually in the companies that are not even listed on the SIC code listing. So essentially, they don't have the industry classification. That happens in OTC space as well.
Those are the most fun.
Yeah. But there are still, like, I think that even on, you know, even if the companies are reporting to the SEC, and actually the one that I previously covered, the Mills Music Trust, that was reporting to SEC as well. So I think that even in those, you know, while it's not the most obscure, I think that it could make sense. And especially, I mean, if you have sort of a clear catalyst here and a clear discount, that doesn't make that much sense.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Well, if there's anything else, well, we can wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, just one thing, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I think that MILC is interesting. I think that, you know, the discount doesn't make much sense, but there are some points which I would really repeat, and that's really that, you know, this is an asset heavy company, and you know, it's kind of clear what the value should be of the asset, and I think that I had some bad experiences with that in the past. So I believe that, you know, MILC should you know, you can unlock the value of the private brokerage firm.
None of these things are ever a sure thing.
Yeah, no, of course. But yeah, I mean, you know, for all things, I wanted to point out the Premier Exhibitions thing with the stock with the Titanic assets, which was essentially that people believed like, oh, it's going to be sold for, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Because you have this independent valuation of the asset, so you essentially have like a book value that you can refer to. And so, like, this is the book value, and this is gonna get what you're gonna get, right? And then you have a market cap which is like, you know, usually below that, and you say, well, why the market doesn't believe that? And I think that's, you know, what really people should understand. And I think that in the case of MILC, I don't think that it makes much sense.
Yeah. Would you be willing to share about your experience with Premier Exhibitions?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's one of my main learning points from OTC. Like, that was a stock where I learned most about what to do and what not to do and how to improve my research, because it kind of was a complex situation. So Premier Exhibition was the cool stock of the day in the OTC community, because you could own, and it's, well, you can still do that, actually. It still trades, and the bank proceedings are still ongoing and so on and so forth. But it was cool because you can own a part of Titanic artifact. So this company actually claimed to the wreckage of Titanic, and they got the artifact out of it, and they own actually the artifact. So the main value of the company was tied to these artifacts. But it was actually an operating company, and they did some exhibitions as well on the side. But the main value was in the Titanic artifacts. And so the thesis, actually the long thesis, was here way before 2017 when I got to learn about the company. The thesis was here, you know, in 2007, for example, 10 years, already for 10 years, because the hope was that eventually they would auction off these artifacts and they would get, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for it. So the company itself was trading at, you know, let's say 10 to 20 to 30 million in market cap for most of the time. I'm not sure that it's super certain, but just like, you know, less than $100 million, let's say. And the independent valuation of the artifacts, there was this independent valuation that they've done of the artifacts, was saying that it's worth, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. I think that, like, in total, there are two artifact sections, like the American one and the French one, and I think combined they should be worth, I think, around $240 million, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So most of the time you could see this huge discount and people would be like, oh my God, that makes a lot of sense, right? You have this huge asset that everybody would want because you had these artifacts that sold, you know, at auctions for insane amounts from Titanic. So there were a couple of artifacts that actually people were able to buy, and they were not connected to premier exhibitions. And, you know, it was like a violin from Titanic selling at like $100,000, right? So people were like, oh my God, this is true. Like, the independent valuation makes sense. You can look at these, you know, artifacts, and you can say, well, it's certainly worth much more than the current market cap. And the company tried to actually auction it off before I got to know about the company. So I think in around early 2010s, they actually wanted to go through an auction of the artifacts, and they wanted to get the value. They wanted to unlock it, and that was the time when a lot of actually fund managers got into the stock, and they were big fans of that because they saw the value. They said, like, yeah, it makes sense. But the discount was still there, and, you know, not everyone was convinced. And in the end, in early 2000s, in 2010s, the auction went through, and there was apparently a group of people that wanted to buy the artifacts for about $165 million, which, again, would be a nice premium to the market cap, but actually didn't really... You know, they never followed through with it. So there was this offer, and they never paid it, and actually they were stuck with the artifacts, you know. So that was like 7 years ago. And I stumbled upon the company in 2017, where the situation was kind of different because the operating company went bust. So they were actually in a bankruptcy proceedings. And you could still buy the stock. So it's very similar to FNX, the stock that I mentioned. It was essentially a stub. So you are not buying any operating company, but you're essentially buying a claim on the company. And in a bankruptcy proceeding, it is usual that they sell off the asset. And if there is some sort of operating business, they might restructure it. But, you know, they just try to get rid of the liabilities, right? And so Premier Exhibitions, the company, the operating company, had some debts. So essentially, you know, it makes sense to sell the assets, the Titanic assets, to pay for the liabilities. And whatever is left, the stockholders would get, you know, the equity holders. So essentially, you know, that was the initial thesis in when the bankruptcy came in 2017 or 18. They would get the premium what they get in their stock. And I was looking at it and I thought, oh my God, there's the discount, there's this independent valuation, there's this like asset that makes a lot of sense. If you look at the violin for $100,000, like, oh my God, they got that a lot. It's going to make a lot of sense. And a lot of people, again, got excited. The stock in 2018 went from, like, you know, a few cents on dollar, a few cents to around, I think, $8-$9. So actually, if you were early on the second trade in Premier Exhibitions, you made a lot of money. You made actually a lot of money. But I got a bit later on, and I thought, you know what, it doesn't matter that it's trading at, like, $5. I still get this huge premium from the auction, right? There was, again, a lot of fund managers that have been involved with that in the stock, and they've been actually publicly saying, like, look, like, we're trying to get the auction going, and, you know, we want to make sure that the equity holders will get their fair share. And so I was like, fair enough. So that's even that's there. So the discount still doesn't make sense, you know, still didn't make sense. But it turned out that, you know, that, again, the auction was really, it didn't really go through. The interest was kind of, you know, weird, and no one kind of came in and said, I'm going to buy it for $200 million, even though apparently James Cameron, the guy that actually directed Titanic, he apparently wanted to bid on the artifacts and wanted to, like, bid, like, in hundreds of millions of dollars, but they actually never went through. And now it seems that they're going to sell it for like $10 million, the whole thing. There are a couple of reasons for that, but what I want to point out is that, you know, if you have this kind of asset which is, you know, hiding in plain sight, you know, you look at the SEC filing or the independent valuation and say, oh, that looks so great, like, just a clear discount, you know, think twice and do the research properly, because this is a red flag. If it's so clear, you know, it's probably too good to be true, as the old adage goes in the financial world. So that's kind of like one thing I wanted to point out, like, with regards to Premier Exhibitions, I think. And that's what I learned, like, first thing is, like, if it's an asset heavy thing, you just want to make sure that, you know, it really makes a lot of sense. And I think looking back, I could see some of the red flags if I were to research further and further into the complex situation.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then just the second thing, if you ever look at a legal situation, always, you know, if they say the court is like the deadline for the court proceedings is like, you know, 2019, just add 2 years, right? It's just like 2021 and you'll be fine because it will get delayed. So a lot of times it's just, that's the case. That's a small thing.
Interesting. All right. Well, Jan, it was a pleasure having you on.
Perfect. Well, thanks. I really enjoyed it, and it was great chatting with you. And I would really like to thank you for having me.
Yeah, likewise. All right. Well, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.